A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about range hoods. How unhealthy is it to actually not have one? What can you do to ventilate a kitchen if you're stuck without a proper hood? And how to size one so it actually pulls enough air? I have to say, this is the kind of question that sounds mundane until you start looking at the numbers, and then it gets unsettling fast.
It really does. And by the way, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing the script today, so if I sound unusually coherent, that's why.
Alright, so where do we start with this? Because I think most people, myself included, until I actually thought about it, assume a range hood is basically a noise machine with a light bulb that you flip on when something burns.
That's exactly the common perception, and it's wrong in a way that has actual health consequences. Let me lay out what's happening when you cook. You're generating particulate matter, PM2.5, which are particles small enough to get deep into your lungs and cross into your bloodstream. You're generating nitrogen dioxide, especially with gas stoves. You're generating carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, acrolein, and a whole cocktail of volatile organic compounds. And these aren't trace amounts. A 2022 study from Stanford measured nitrogen dioxide levels from gas cooking in homes and found that in many kitchens, levels exceed EPA outdoor air quality standards within minutes, not hours, minutes. And the health effects are well documented. Nitrogen dioxide is a respiratory irritant linked to asthma, particularly childhood asthma. A meta-analysis published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health found that children in homes with gas stoves have a 42% higher risk of current asthma and a 24% higher risk of lifetime asthma diagnosis.
42% is not a rounding error. That's substantial.
It's enormous. And it's not just gas stoves. Electric and induction cooking still produce particulate matter from the food itself. Searing meat, frying with oil, even toasting bread, all of it generates fine particles. The difference is, you're not adding combustion byproducts on top. But the particulate load from cooking alone is enough that the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab has done extensive work showing that cooking is one of the largest indoor sources of PM2.5 in homes, often exceeding what you'd see on a moderately polluted outdoor day.
The range hood isn't just about clearing smoke when you blacken a steak. It's a piece of health infrastructure.
That's exactly the right way to frame it. And here's the part that I think most people don't realize. Many range hoods, especially the ones that come standard in apartments or older homes, are recirculating types. They take air from above the stove, run it through a thin metal mesh or maybe a charcoal filter, and blow it right back into the kitchen. They capture some larger grease particles. They do essentially nothing for the fine particulate matter, the nitrogen dioxide, the carbon monoxide, or the VOCs. They're noise machines that give you the feeling of doing something useful. The Wirecutter review of range hoods, which was updated just a couple years ago, was quite blunt about this. They said, quote, "Recirculating range hoods are basically useless for air quality."
That's brutal.
It is, but it's accurate based on the physics. To actually remove these pollutants, you need a hood that vents to the outside. That's the fundamental divide, ducted versus ductless. And if you don't have a ducted hood, you're essentially cooking in a sealed box with whatever your stove is putting out.
Let's talk about that scenario, because I suspect a lot of people are in exactly that position. You can't punch holes through the wall, or you own an older home where retrofitting ductwork is a five-figure project. What do you actually do?
There are several layers of mitigation, and I'll go from least to most effective. The absolute minimum is opening a window while you cook. Ideally, two windows, on opposite sides of the kitchen if possible, to create cross-ventilation. The Department of Energy's guidance on kitchen ventilation emphasizes that natural ventilation, just opening a window, is significantly better than nothing, but it's inconsistent. Wind direction, outdoor temperature, the stack effect in your building, all of these affect how well it works. And in winter or summer, nobody wants to open a window.
Right. You're trading air quality for thermal comfort. and most people pick thermal comfort every time.
Which is why the next step up is a portable air purifier with a HEPA filter and a substantial activated carbon stage. Place it as close to the stove as you safely can. It won't capture everything at the source the way a proper hood would, but a good unit running on high can reduce particulate levels substantially. Consumer Reports has tested this. They found that a quality air purifier in the kitchen can cut peak PM2.5 levels by 50 to 70%, depending on the unit and the room size. The carbon filter helps with some of the gaseous pollutants, though it's less effective for nitrogen dioxide specifically.
What about those window-mounted exhaust fans? The ones that look like a box fan wedged into the frame?
Those are actually quite effective if positioned well. A twin window fan set to exhaust mode, placed in the window closest to the stove, can pull a meaningful amount of contaminated air out of the kitchen. The key is making sure you have a source of makeup air, another window cracked open somewhere else, so you're not creating negative pressure that fights against the fan. The Department of Energy notes that exhaust fans should move at least 100 CFM to be useful for cooking, and many window fans can hit that on their high setting.
CFM being cubic feet per minute.
Yes, and that brings us to the sizing question, which is where this gets properly nerdy. How big a hood do you need for it to actually work? The rule of thumb from the Home Ventilating Institute, which is the industry body that sets these standards, is that you want 100 CFM per 10,000 BTU of burner output on a gas stove. So if you have a typical 4-burner gas range where the total maximum output is around 40,000 BTU, you'd want at least 400 CFM. For electric or induction, it's based on the cooking surface width. The recommendation is 100 CFM per linear foot of cooktop width. A standard 30-inch range would need at least 250 CFM, and those are minimums.
That's actual extracted CFM, not what the box says on the shelf.
This is a critical distinction. The CFM rating on the box is measured in ideal laboratory conditions with zero duct resistance. Once you install the hood and connect it to real ductwork, the actual extraction drops, sometimes dramatically. Every bend in the duct, every foot of length, the diameter of the duct, the type of exterior vent cap, all of it imposes static pressure that reduces airflow. The rule of thumb among HVAC engineers is that a 90-degree bend in the ductwork can reduce effective CFM by 10 to 15%. A long duct run of 15 to 20 feet can knock off another 20 to 30%. So if you need 400 CFM, you might need to buy a hood rated for 600 or even higher to account for real-world losses.
The sizing conversation is really two conversations. What do I need at the cooktop? And then what do I need to buy to actually get that after installation losses?
And then there's makeup air. This is a problem that a lot of people don't encounter until they install a powerful hood and suddenly their house feels weird. Building codes in most jurisdictions require makeup air systems once you exceed a certain CFM threshold, often 400 CFM, though it varies. The International Residential Code specifies that kitchens with exhaust fans exceeding 400 CFM must have a mechanical makeup air system. Because if you're pulling 500 cubic feet of air out of your kitchen every minute, that air has to come from somewhere. If you don't provide a dedicated makeup air path, it'll pull air down the chimney, through gaps in the building envelope, or even backdraft your water heater or furnace vent, which can pull carbon monoxide into the living space.
That's a genuinely terrifying failure mode. You install a nice hood to make your kitchen safer, and you end up pulling combustion gases into the house from your furnace.
It's a known problem, and it's why the code requirements exist. The fix is either a passive makeup air vent, basically a dampered duct that opens when the hood is running to let outside air in, or an active makeup air system with its own fan, which is more expensive but more controllable. In cold climates, you often need to condition that makeup air too, because dumping freezing outside air directly into your kitchen creates its own set of problems.
Let's circle back to the health piece, because I think that's the part Daniel was really driving at. If you don't have a hood, if you're cooking 3 meals a day in a kitchen that isn't properly ventilated, what are we actually talking about in terms of risk?
The evidence has accumulated to the point where it's difficult to dismiss. The Stanford study I mentioned measured real-world cooking scenarios and found that in homes without ventilation, nitrogen dioxide concentrations in the kitchen can spike above 200 parts per billion within minutes of turning on a gas burner. The EPA's 1-hour outdoor air quality standard for nitrogen dioxide is 100 parts per billion, so you're doubling the outdoor limit inside your home repeatedly every time you cook. And the health literature links chronic nitrogen dioxide exposure to increased respiratory infections, aggravated asthma, and reduced lung function, particularly in children. There's also emerging evidence linking long-term exposure to cardiovascular effects.
That's just the nitrogen dioxide piece.
Then there's the particulate matter. PM2.5 is classified as a Group 1 carcinogen by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Cooking is a major indoor source. Frying, in particular, generates enormous numbers of ultrafine particles. A study from the University of Texas at Austin measured particle concentrations during cooking and found that frying a steak on a gas stove could push kitchen PM2.5 levels over 500 micrograms per cubic meter. For context, the World Health Organization's guideline for 24-hour average exposure is 15 micrograms per cubic meter. That's a 30-fold spike.
You're standing in front of the stove, searing a steak, and the air you're breathing is orders of magnitude worse than what's considered safe for a full day of outdoor exposure.
And the particles don't just stay in the kitchen. The Lawrence Berkeley National Lab did tracer studies showing that particles generated in the kitchen spread throughout the house within minutes and can remain suspended for hours. So it's not just the person cooking who's exposed, it's everyone in the home.
That makes me think about the trend toward open-plan living. Kitchens that flow directly into living and dining spaces with no walls, no doors, just one big room. Great for entertaining, but you've eliminated the only barrier between your stove emissions and your sofa.
And it's something the research community has flagged. Open-plan designs mean kitchen pollutants disperse into a larger volume, which lowers the peak concentration, but they also mean there's no way to contain those pollutants to a space where people spend less time. In a traditional closed kitchen, you could close the door and the rest of the house stays relatively clean. In an open plan, your living room becomes part of the mixing zone.
What's the hierarchy here? If someone's listening and thinking, "All right, I need to do something about this," what's the order of operations?
First priority, if you have a ducted hood, use it. Every time you cook, turn it on before you start cooking, not after the smoke alarm goes off. Run it for 10 to 15 minutes after you finish cooking to clear residual pollutants. The DOE specifically recommends this run-on period, and almost nobody does it. Second, if your hood is recirculating and you can't replace it, accept that it's doing almost nothing for air quality and shift to alternative strategies. Open windows, a portable HEPA unit in the kitchen, cooking on the back burners where a recirculating hood might at least capture slightly more. Third, if you're renovating or building, install a properly sized ducted hood with a dedicated makeup air system and size the ductwork correctly. The duct diameter matters enormously. The Home Ventilating Institute recommends a minimum of 6-inch round duct for hoods up to 400 CFM and 8-inch or larger for higher capacities. Undersized ducts create turbulence and noise and kill your extraction rate.
Noise is actually a factor worth talking about. Because a hood that's too loud is a hood people won't use.
The industry measures noise in sones. One sone is roughly equivalent to the sound of a quiet refrigerator. Four sones is about the noise level of a normal conversation. Many hoods on their highest setting run at 6 to 8 sones, which is loud enough that you have to raise your voice to talk over it. The wire cutter testing found that some popular models hit 10 sones on max, which is approaching the level where people actively avoid turning them on. So when you're sizing a hood, there's a trade-off between extraction rate and noise. A larger hood running on a lower setting can move the same amount of air as a smaller hood on high, but much more quietly. That's one of the arguments for oversizing slightly and running it at medium speed.
The other argument for oversizing is the real-world loss through ductwork that you mentioned earlier.
So the practical sizing advice is, calculate your minimum CFM based on the formulas we discussed, then add a buffer for duct losses, typically 25 to 50% depending on how long and convoluted your duct run is, and then consider going up one more size if you want quiet operation. So a 40,000 BTU gas range might need a 600 CFM hood on paper, but you'd install an 800 or 900 CFM unit and run it at 60 or 70% speed. You get the extraction you need without the noise that makes you want to turn it off.
What about the people who say all of this is overblown, that humans have been cooking over fire for millennia, and we turned out fine?
I hear that argument, and I think it misses two things. First, traditional cooking over open fires was done outdoors or in structures with enormous ventilation, thatched roofs, open eaves, no weather sealing. The modern tight home, built for energy efficiency, is a fundamentally different environment. We've sealed our houses so well that whatever we produce indoors stays indoors unless we actively remove it. Second, we have data. We can measure the health outcomes. The asthma rates, the respiratory illness rates, these are quantifiable. And the studies that control for other factors still find a significant effect from indoor cooking emissions. It's not speculation. It's epidemiology.
There's also an irony here. We've spent decades tightening up building envelopes for energy efficiency, which is a genuine good. Lower heating and cooling loads, lower carbon emissions. But we created this secondary problem of indoor air quality that we're only now taking seriously.
It's the classic law of unintended consequences. The American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, ASHRAE, has been pushing for years to make kitchen ventilation a standard part of residential building codes, but adoption is patchy. Some states require it, many don't. And even where it's required, the standards are often minimal.
Let's talk about installation for a minute, because I think a lot of DIY-inclined people might look at this and think, how hard can it be? Cut a hole, mount a hood, run some duct.
The mechanical installation isn't the hardest part, though doing it wrong can be bad. The thing that trips people up is the ductwork design. The number one mistake is using flexible rib duct instead of smooth, rigid duct. That rib duct creates enormous turbulence and static pressure. It can reduce airflow by 30% or more compared to smooth duct of the same diameter. The second mistake is too many bends. Every 90-degree turn is a hit to performance. If you can use two 45-degree fittings with a short straight section between them, that's significantly better than one sharp 90. The third mistake is terminating the duct poorly. If the exterior vent hood has a flimsy damper that doesn't open fully, or if it's a style that restricts airflow, you're choking the system at the exit point. There are exterior vent caps designed specifically for low static pressure. Look for ones with large louvers and a smooth airflow path.
What about the people who have an over-the-range microwave that claims to function as a hood? I see those everywhere.
Almost all over-the-range microwaves are recirculating by default. They have a small internal fan and a grease filter, and they blow the air back into the kitchen. Some can be converted to ducted operation, and if you have that option and the ductwork, it's worth doing. But even in ducted mode, over-the-range microwaves typically max out around 300 CFM, and that's the optimistic rating, not real-world performance. Their fans are small, the internal airflow path is convoluted, and they don't have the capture area of a dedicated hood. The capture area matters because cooking plumes rise and spread. A hood that's too narrow or doesn't extend far enough over the front burners will miss a significant fraction of the pollutants.
The microwave combo unit is better than nothing if it's ducted, but it's not a substitute for a proper hood.
And for induction cooktops, there's an interesting nuance. Induction doesn't produce combustion gases, so you're eliminating nitrogen dioxide, carbon monoxide, and the other byproducts of burning gas. That's a genuine health win. But you're still producing particulates from the food itself. So you still need ventilation, just less of it, and you don't need the same CFM that a gas range demands.
Which brings up an interesting policy question. If the health evidence against unvented gas cooking is this strong, should building codes be phasing out gas stoves in new construction unless a properly sized ducted hood is mandatory?
There are jurisdictions moving in that direction. Several California cities have banned gas hookups in new residential construction, and while the stated rationale is usually climate-related, reducing methane emissions, the indoor air quality argument is just as strong, if not stronger, because it directly affects the occupants. The American Medical Association issued a statement in 2022 recognizing the link between gas stove emissions and childhood asthma. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has indicated it's looking at the issue. This is an active policy debate.
It's one of those areas where the personal and the political intersect in a very concrete way. You can't opt out of the air in your own kitchen.
And for renters especially, this is a tough problem. You don't control the appliances. You can't install a ducted hood, so the mitigation strategies become really important. Window ventilation, portable air purifiers, cooking on back burners, using lids to contain splatter and steam, being strategic about what you cook and how. Frying and high-heat searing produce far more particulates than boiling or steaming. If you're in a poorly ventilated kitchen, shifting toward lower emission cooking methods can meaningfully reduce your exposure.
Lids, that's a simple one that I think a lot of people don't consider. Putting a lid on a pan doesn't just trap heat, it traps particles.
And using the back burners matters because most recirculating hoods, useless as they are, at least have their intake aligned with the back of the stove. If you cook on the front burners, the plume rises and misses even the minimal capture zone.
To pull all of this together for Daniel's question, how unhealthy is it not to have a hood? The answer seems to be quite unhealthy, particularly if you're cooking on gas. The evidence linking unvented cooking to respiratory problems, especially childhood asthma, is robust and getting stronger. If you don't have a hood, the mitigation hierarchy is: open windows for cross-ventilation, use a portable HEPA air purifier in the kitchen, cook on back burners, use lids, favor lower emission cooking methods, and if you can, install even a window exhaust fan. For sizing a proper hood, you want 100 CFM per 10,000 BTU for gas, or 100 CFM per linear foot of cooktop width for electric and induction. Then add a 25 to 50% buffer for duct losses, and consider oversizing further if quiet operation matters to you. Duct diameter, smooth rigid duct, minimal bends, and a good exterior vent cap are essential for real-world performance. And if you're going above 400 CFM, you need to think about makeup air.
That's a comprehensive summary. The only thing I'd add is that this is one of those topics where the gap between what's known in the research community and what most people actually do in their homes is enormous. Indoor air quality doesn't get the same attention as outdoor air quality, but for most people, the majority of their exposure to combustion byproducts and cooking particulates happens inside their own kitchen. It's a solvable problem. The solutions exist. They just require awareness and, in some cases, investment.
The investment isn't trivial. A good ducted range hood, properly installed with makeup air, can run anywhere from $1,500 to $5,000 or more, depending on the unit and the complexity of the installation. But when you stack that against the health costs, asthma medications, doctor visits, law school, and work days, it starts to look like a reasonable trade-off.
There was a cost-benefit analysis published a few years ago that attempted to quantify the societal cost of gas stove emissions in the U. They estimated it in the billions annually when you factor in healthcare costs and lost productivity. That's a macro number, but it scales down to the individual household level. A properly vented kitchen is a long-term health investment.
It's also one of those things that nobody thinks about until they're in a new house, and suddenly the kids are wheezing, and you're trying to figure out why. The air you can't see is doing the damage.
The damage is cumulative. It's not like one evening of stir-frying without ventilation is going to give you asthma. It's the repeated exposure day after day, year after year, that drives the epidemiological signal. That's why the childhood asthma numbers are so striking. Kids are smaller, their lungs are still developing, and they're breathing more air per unit of body weight than adults. They're disproportionately affected.
If you've got young kids and a gas stove and no ducted hood, this should be near the top of your home improvement list. Above the new countertops. Above the backsplash.
1,000%. And if you can't do the full hood installation, at least get a good air purifier and run it in the kitchen. That's the single highest impact thing you can do short of ducting to the outside.
All right. I think we've covered this from the health side, the ventilation alternatives, and the sizing math. Daniel, hopefully that gives you what you need. And for everyone else, go look at your range hood and figure out if it actually vents outside, or if it's just blowing hot air back at your face.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Between the World Wars, a pigment chemist in South Sudan documented that the fine dust carried by katabatic winds off the Imatang Mountains contained enough iron oxide to tint local cotton fields, a faint rust red during the dry season. The pigment, when collected and ground, produced a shade nearly identical to Venetian red.
The visual of red-tinted cotton fields in South Sudan is going to sit with me for a while. This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, head to My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go, from sloth slow takes to facts on cue. We chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.